Working Cows Podcast, Episode 38.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, the host of the Working Cows podcast. I wanted to let you know where you can get in touch with me. You can find me on Twitter at YP Clay Connery. That is YP Clay Connery, as in youth pastor Clay Connery. Had a couple of new followers over there this week. Just wanted to let you know if you want to connect with me, go ahead and do that. You can go to workingcows.net/contact. And send an email through there. I try to respond to every email I get. Also, you can find the Working Cows podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/workingcows. So we have with us today Adrienne Lule. She is a AI tech, spent 7 years as an instructor at Oregon State University in the reproduction department. And Adrienne reached out to me actually through the website and said that if I ever wanted a podcast in a pinch, that she could put something together on AI service. So that is how we got connected. And I really appreciate her taking the initiative to reach out to me. Adrienne, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows podcast.
Okay. Hi, Clay. I'm happy to be here today. I wanted to talk to you about getting started in AI, some of the obstacles and some of the ways you can go about it, even if you're a commercial producer just trying to increase weaning weights.
I'm really looking forward to this discussion. What's your background first? How did you get started in this, and what have you spent?
I grew up on a really small farm with some sheep, actually. And when I went to college, I got into the reproduction because I had a great professor. And so then that's what really got me passionate about working with cows and AI reproduction. I went on to get my master's in reproduction at OSU and taught there. And then I've been working in the AI industry for probably about 8 years now. And so I'm an independent contractor for all West Select sires. And so I breed, do custom breeding jobs for anything from 1 to 300 cows.
And you spent some time at OSU as a professor, right?
Yeah, I taught some applied reproduction classes, calving school classes that were designed to try to get the students, hands-on experience and stuff that they can actually take back to the farm, and get them. A lot of kids now are coming to college and wanting to get into animal science, and they don't have that much background, so it gets them a chance to just see the normal processes of managing cattle.
And so you've been exposed to a lot of different facilities over.
Yes. I have seen, I think, pretty much every kind of facility possible. I've begun to decline the all roper and tire to the tree jobs. But luckily I'm at a point now where there's, you know, most of the people have pretty decent facilities. Some have extremely, highly designed, covered, everything you can think of. And some are just simple, panel setups. And both of them can work. So you don't have to have it all to get into AI.
Yeah. I was in the vet's office the other day and I saw a picture of the vet. The guy was holding the heifer, I guess, with a show halter, it looked like, and the vet was working on the back end. I'm not sure what was going on, if he was AI-ing or what, but that's a gentle heifer. I don't think I've got any that could stand for that.
I see a lot of the show heifers, around are pretty docile and used to being handled. So You know, you can get away with a lot more, I guess, with them. But yeah, you can also just have, like I said, simple facilities, and just a head catch and some panels really works if you're just doing a small amount of cattle. And
yeah. What do you see as some of the barriers to getting started in an AI program?
So the main thing that I hear, versus facilities, and then time and money. So with the facilities thing, with All West and with many of the people that do AI, they have the double breeding barns available that they can bring onto your facility. And you can also often bring in panels or a double alley. And so if you're not familiar with the double barn, all you really need is a corral and a lead up. And it's a trailer. It looks kind of like a container that you bring in and back up to your alley. And it allows you to bring in cattle through kind of a back door. And they can either go to the left or the right to two different stalls. And that's just a bar drops down behind them. And there is natural footing underneath them. And it's very dark in there. And you can load one cow while another person is breeding a cow on the other side, because there's a gate that protects the breeder and the person that's breeding a cow. And then you release them out the front. So you can actually go through a lot of cows, you know, 100 cows an hour with something like that when things are running smoothly. So that's something that you don't have to have your own facilities. You can rent this, and it makes that, you know, entry into doing AI for a group of heifers the first time much easier. Oh, the other thing that's really easy to set up is like a bud box off of, you know, an existing just corral and alley. And so often we'll bring panels in, set up a bud box behind a double alley. And so they just have to bring a group of heifers in, and they'll almost self-load themselves into the alley and then come down to the AI barn.
Yep. This fall when we worked our cows, we ran them through a bud box into a double alley, and it was slick. It was really slick.
Yeah. I really, I encourage a lot of my clients to look up the bud boxes, or I try to help, you know, show how they could set it up themselves, because often people say, oh, I don't have a tub and a sweep. And it's like, you can set up a bud box with, you know, just panels and a gate, you know, and some canvas put on, you know, the right gates. And, so you don't have to be going out and buying all those. I see a lot of the tubs and sweeps, the kind of less expensive ones that are real open. They don't work very well. I think the cattle get a little confused about where you want them to go. And so I'd rather see a bud box.
Yeah, it was the best that facility had ever worked for us. And I think what made the difference is we took some rubber belting, like off of an old conveyor belt, and we blocked all the rails except for the gate they were going out. You
right.
know? And that was, so the only way they could see out was the place we wanted them to go. And they, you know, like you said, they just kind of figure it out. I think another thing that we figured out, and my dad's been saying this forever, right? is smaller groups, you know, it's smaller groups of cattle into the bud box and
yes,
just enough to fit in the double alley basically, and then go get another group of them and don't keep them sitting there forever in the bud box, kind of wait till the alley's ready for more cattle.
Right. So. 'Cause then they kind of see, oh, that last heifer's going, I think I'm going to follow her, you know?
Right.
And I learned that really early. I did an internship with Patsy Hooten at the Heartland Cattle Company in McCook, Nebraska. And they, really early on were following these, you know, kind of Bud Williams techniques. And, you know, we got in trouble if we brought more than five cows up to the, you know, to the tub or whatever, because, you increase your chances of them turning back on you, not, you know, they start rushing. I joke that they go into a sardine spiral where they just put their head under the other one and they don't ever come up for air to see, you know, what should I do here? So.
Right. Yeah. I had, recently I had Dylan Biggs on, and he said, with good stockmanship, it's surprising how poor a facility you can get the job done in.
Yeah. I listened to that one. I like that a lot. You know, and I think we have the tendency to get in a hurry, and, I get the impression that sometimes, especially the first time I'm somewhere breeding cows, that they're like, well, we need to hurry. We need to get through this. And I'm like, we have all day. And as soon as you take that approach that, like, let's just slow down, it's okay. You know, we're not in a hurry, that everyone relaxes a little and the cattle flow better. So yeah, you can use, like you said, you know, poor facilities and good stockmanship to get the job done.
And you have basically outlined, you know, the Bud Williams system as far as what you have been exposed to. What kind of difference do you think that makes as far as the ability to get a job done? I think, you know, even more quickly if you're willing to go slower.
Yeah. And it's very counterintuitive. Well, just like I was saying, you know, you relax and the cattle relax and they come up to the barn or the chute or whatever you're trying to do. And, you know, we have a tendency that the cow stops and you really want to get on her and get her going. And I think sometimes you just let them stop and like think about it for just a minute, that they'll make the decision to move forward. And so you don't end up with these big train wrecks and rodeos and, you know, them piling on top of each other. I think it's really important.
One of my favorite memes on the internet is a picture of the Brahma cow up on top of the chute.
Oh,
I'm sure
yeah.
you've seen that one. It says cow for sale as is.
Right. Yeah. You loader.
I saw another one the other day of it looked like a pretty good sized steer on top of a semi truck.
Yeah. Like exactly how did it get up there when they're loading it? Yeah.
Yeah. You see all kinds of stuff. I'm sure you've seen a lot of different things, in your time in different facilities and stuff like that. But what are some of the other barriers? You said time and money.
So time and money, you know, well, usually when you're trying to breed cows is the time of year that you're also trying to harvest, or, you know, there's a lot of other stuff going on the farm. So it's difficult to break away and spend that time. I think that's the beauty of having timed AI synchronization programs, where at least you can schedule it and you can say, on this day, we're going to put cedars in, on this day, we're going to pull them out, on this day, we're going to breed, or things like that. But I think it's a little short-sighted to say, I don't have time right now. You need to look ahead and say, I'm going to save so much time during calving season and headache there that it's totally worth it. And, you know, some of these guys that have been AIing for many years, they have calving windows that are like 45 days or less even, because they are synchronizing their cows, and then they're probably culling off the cows that aren't fitting into that window. And, you know, those cows need to go somewhere else. Maybe they're good cows, but they fit into somebody else's program better than your own. And so there's a really neat little program. It's called estrusync.com. It's mobile friendly. You can just enter all the dates that you want to be breeding or calving, and it'll show you like the schedule and the timing for that. So I really encourage people to look at that for trying to plan out, or I'll look at it and it'll help you plan out your estrus synchronization. And the cool thing about that is it also gives you kind of a cost analysis too of, you know, if I use, you know, synchronization program A, it's going to cost, you know, $10 more than a different one. So there's ways to make it more efficient at the front end there. And then, like I said, have just a much better calving experience. One of the concerns I hear a lot is, well, I don't want all those calves born on one day. And they've found that the cows spread themselves out over 10 days, sometimes 2 weeks, even though they've all been AI'd on the same day. And I kind of feel like if you're going to be out checking for calves, you might as well be calving out a bunch of cows, not just, you know, a few at a time. So I think that's another time and money saving, you know, on the backside. As far as the other obstacle, money, again, there's this upfront cost. There's so much to gain, even just outside of your increase in genetics. There's so much to gain by increased weaning weights with your calves, and just kind of an increased overall reproductive success in your cows. That again, it's going to pay you back just more and more each year. I mean, like anything, there's an upfront cost and often that's kind of hard to swallow, but when it's successful, you know, it really pays off. I was really happy. I had a first-time producer this year, and he said, well, that was easier than I thought, and it didn't cost as much as I thought. And And one of the things that had instigated him into doing AI this year is that they had a one of their bulls broke his leg, so they had to butcher him. And so the cost of buying, you know, a new bull was way more than AIing his group of cows this year. So that was a good transition. This is the year to start.
So you're talking about timed AI as kind of a good method. And is that as opposed to heat detection or what are you?
Right. So yeah, as opposed to heat detection, there's some synchronization programs that you even heat detect for maybe like a week after you've synchronized them. And there's still some people that are using heat detection, like in pens of heifers, especially when they're in maybe like a feedlot. But you're out there heat checking every day and breeding the cows that are in heat. And so you know, you're always going to get a little better conception rates off of a so-called natural heat where you're picking them off. But by timed AIing them on either one day or 2 days using like a split timed AI, you condense so much of your labor that that there's a real benefit to that, that just you're kind of getting, you're getting in and you're getting out and you're done.
With the heat detection, how long does a heat cycle last? It's not very long, is it?
No, it really varies. 6 to sometimes 24 hours. So it's a short window. And you want to be breeding them roughly 12 hours after they're in standing heat. But again, that's a window of probably 8 to 16 hours. So in these larger projects, so maybe I should back up a little bit. There's a program that we've been using in heifers. It's a 14-day seeder synchronization. And when then it comes time to AI, you can do something called split-timed AI. So we put an Estratech patch. It's like a lottery scratch-off ticket. And you stick it on their tail head. And when the other heifers ride, those heifers that are in standing heat, it scratches it off and it lights it up. It goes from gray to like a bright color. So that allows you to come in the morning and say, and just pick off all the ones that are in heat that have that activated tag. So it helps you with your heat detection.
And then you're using that in conjunction with a timed AI for the rest.
Right. And so then the first day you come in at your timed AI time, which is like 66 hours coming off of the prostaglandin shot, and you breed everyone that's in heat that first day, and then you come back 24 hours later and you breed everybody else. And so you're allowing those heifers that aren't quite in heat yet to catch up, and you're breeding them to at a time that's a little bit closer to what they should be bred.
That gives you a pretty good opportunity to see the difference in conception rates, I would imagine.
Right. So there's been a whole bunch of studies done by Dr. Patterson out of University of Missouri. And he has shown that the real gain in conception rates is by letting those heifers come into estrus and get bred that 24 hours later, so on that second day. And that's where you can make a lot of gains with using split-timed AI, like I think 5 to 8% increase in your pregnancy rates.
And what kind of conception rates are you guys, what's typical, I guess, or what are you experiencing with some timed AI or split-timed AI?
Yeah, so industry average is like 55%, but so you can get your pregnancy rates up, though, to maybe 60, 70%. I've had some really good success where we've probably got up into 75% pregnancy rates.
And I've heard in the past, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was out of Iowa. And he was, I think he was in the university system there. He was talking about the fact that your actual conception rate is pretty big, but there's a lot of slough.
Yeah. So there's, they know that actual conception is something like 90%. So the actual, you know, fertilization is occurring. And then where you lose all that is a bunch of different steps down the road after that. So sometimes it's just genetically, it's not a viable option. Then your next kind of time for it to fail is like at implantation. So when we talk about like moving heifers after an AI, you want to move them in the first 5 days. The embryo is still way high up in the reproductive tract and the oviduct, and it hasn't tried to implant yet, and there's no maternal recognition, so the cow doesn't even know that it's there yet, essentially. And maternal recognition happens around like 15, 16 days after they've been bred. And so that's a sensitive time that you want them to be in place wherever they're going to be at and, you know, moved and settled in. And then most of your embryonic loss happens before day 40. And so, again, that's just a number of different things. Changes in feed and, you know, changing the rumen environment, stress, heat stress, and then just kind of sometimes things don't work out. So that's how you go from a 90% fertilization down to, you know, a 60% actual pregnancy rate off of one AI.
And so the difference between an AI and a bull is that there's multiple bulls with them for 60 days and they come back and get them, maybe get them again.
Right. Yeah.
And so is there any benefit, or do you see people running them through more than once for AI?
For AI. So in seed stock situations, you might give them the opportunity to be bred AI like a second time. But most of the time you're still utilizing bulls. And so you do your AI and your synchronization, and then you need to still plan on having some bulls available, you know, to cover them for a second or maybe a third cycle, depending on what you want your calving window to be. The great thing about synchronizing and AIing is that if you give all the cows the opportunity to get pregnant on the first day of the breeding season, then you're going to have, just say for easy numbers, 50% of your calves born in that first week. And then also you can, if you're doing really well, you can get, you know, 80% of your cows calving in like a 40-day window. So the gains that you have just on weaning weights, because those cows, you know, those calves had so much more time to just gain weight. It almost doesn't matter, you know, what their genetics are so much. It's just they've had that many more days to gain. And then you also have a much more uniform calf crop, which is a bonus to people that are selling groups of calves.
You mentioned earlier, you know, cows that fit your system. How about selecting candidates for being bred? How do we go about doing that? Or what are some of the things that you guys have found helpful in selecting good candidates?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've heard a lot of your other speakers talk about, you know, an open cow is useless to you and not making you money. So really, one of your first things to cut is just whether she's open after, you know, however many days of your breeding season. She needs to go. You can't afford to keep her another year. So reproduction is a really, you know, important obviously, you know, important factor in whether you're culling or keeping a cow.
Yeah,
we're all guilty of keeping though the favorite cow and the pretty cow and, you know, the show cow. So.
Right. Yeah, that was my favorite. One of my favorite moments was Bob Howard said, you know, the only I don't remember now. Maybe it was Kit Farrow. One of the two said the only test she has to pass is a pregnancy test.
Yeah, exactly. And then another really big factor, I think, is docility. You know, excitable cows they don't gain. They don't get pregnant. They teach their calves to be cuckoo. They are going to run you over. And so they're a liability. And so if they have a bad, you know, attitude, they need to go. There's just no reason to be keeping them around. Especially, I mean, we have a docility EPD now. We can... or even if you don't look at that, you know, just keep a scoring of your own cows. You know, there's been studies that they show the exit velocity from the chute, and they can correlate that to pregnancy rates. So, you know, that Brahma cow that's up on top of the chute, you know, she's not getting pregnant.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was out in the pasture yesterday. I'm working with a new horse, and I was trying to get just putting some miles on him, and this little calf come zooming up behind me, you know, head down, like ready to do battle. And I looked at it and I'm like, oh yeah, I know that cow number.
Yeah.
She's chased me across the calving pasture before.
Right. And here you have this little baby calf that's ready to take you, you know. Right.
It's like, where do you think he learned that?
Exactly. But so I guess to go back though, as far as choosing, you know, the I think the easiest place to start is with your heifers. And so our tendency is to go out and pick the biggest and the best looking heifer. And say, I'm going to keep those, where really we need to be asking ourselves who's going to get pregnant. I have producers that are, what they're starting to do is they keep pretty much every heifer except for the very young, the obvious culls. And especially those heifers that are born at the beginning of the calving season from the year before, they're going to be most likely to have reached puberty and be reproductively, you know, cycling and going. But on the other hand, so you give all these heifers an opportunity to get pregnant once by AI. And then depending on how many you want to keep, you can do, you know, a pregnancy test and find all your AI bred heifers. So those are your most reproductively, you know, sound heifers, and you keep them. And then you, even if you put the bulls in to cover them when, you know, the ones that return to estrus, those are the ones that get sold. So now you're keeping your most fertile heifers in the herd, and they're also calving the earliest in the season. And so they have the best chance the next year of, you know, getting bred again and staying in the herd. It takes a lot of years for those heifers to pay you back. And so you want to keep the most profitable ones.
And are there any studies as far as size of the heifer that show, you know, kind of whether or not they're going to be reproductively viable?
So it's not so much about size as puberty is a function of fatness. And so a lot of these heifers are just going to be a naturally smaller cow. And so they're going to reach a certain percentage of their mature body weight and then start putting on fat instead of growing up. And so they're going to start cycling and coming into estrus. The kind of rule of thumb that a lot of people have used for a lot of years is breed them at 65% of their mature body weight, and hopefully they're calving at 85% of their mature body weight for the first time. But then there's some other studies. I think it was, Dr. Funston, where they're developing heifers at a lot lower percentage of their mature body weight, maybe 55%. And the reason they're doing that is because they're not developing them in a feedlot. They're, you know, keeping them out on pasture or their lower input feed. And then they're breeding the heifers. And the ones that get pregnant again are the ones that stay in. You have a lower pregnancy rate from that first AI, but you're getting those more mature heifers that are just a little more efficient, probably. And so then the long-term benefits is that you're not spending as much to develop those heifers, and you're also culling out the ones that are already a weak link, I think.
Sure. You know, we talked about that with Dr. Trey Patterson of the Padlock Ranch on Working Cows podcast episode 11. So that'll be linked at the show notes page. This is as good a time as any to mention the show notes page. It was workingcows.net/38. You can find the links that we've talked about so far at workingcows.net/38. I think that was Dr. Funston out of the University of Nebraska. And I think I did link to that study at workingcows.net/11, but I'll link to that episode in the show notes page for this episode, along with the Esther Tech and Dr. Patterson's study, if I can track it down. And so I just wanted to mention that. Going back to what you were just saying, though, it's more of a function of fleshing ability. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Right, because all the reproductive hormones are steroid hormones, and so they're, you know, fat-based. And so as they get fatter and they're not spending so much time kind of, you know, growing all that skeletal frame, you know, that's when they're going to be cycling. So and you're targeting, you know, we're trying to target heifers to be calving at 24 months. So you're going to be trying to breed, you know, the average of them at 15 months, but some of them are going to be a little younger. And some are just coming, you know, they're going to come start cycling and start puberty a lot earlier than others. so back with like choosing heifers for who you're keeping, sometimes those smaller heifers are the ones that you didn't know that they're cycling by choosing by size or even weight, because they're just going to be a more moderate, smaller cow when they grow up. So the easiest way is just give them the opportunity to become pregnant. And then if they take you up on it, you know, they get a chance at staying in the herd.
Yeah, I don't want to be the one telling that heifer whether or not she's a good heifer. I want her to tell me by getting bred.
Yeah. You can, so if you do want to go another step into like selecting heifers, you can do reproductive tract scoring and also pelvic measurements. You can have your vet come and they can palpate to see if the reproductive tract is cycling. You can feel whether it's follicles or corpus lutea on the ovaries that indicate that she's cycling. And so that's a way to actually say, okay, I do know that you're cycling. And then you can cut out the ones that are completely not ready. And then you can save some money by not even, you know, synchronizing and breeding them and spending that money on them. If you do the 14-day seeder synchronization, you have to start it about 30 days ahead of your breeding. But the good thing about that is that at the time you're putting in the seeder insert, you could be doing your reproductive tract scoring and saying, okay, yeah, she's big enough to start on the synchronization. You can do a pelvic measurement and you can cull out the ones that have maybe a very small or misshapen pelvis that's going to indicate calving problems later. And then the other good thing is that you can do your vaccination boosters at that time too, because you're 30 days ahead of breeding. You're not going to be interfering with the breeding and the pregnancy by giving vaccines too close to your AI date. In one instance, that program has you running them through the chute an extra time. But if you can use that first time through the chute as a way to vaccinate, deworm, you know, put fly tags in, I don't know, and then do this reproductive tract scoring, you kind of utilize that trip through the chute better. And then it's essentially the same amount of trips to the chute after that for the rest of the synchronization.
What about postpartum and, you know, how does that work as far as is there a false cycle there that we need to take into account? And then, you know, the second cycle is the one we probably want to get them bred in, right?
So generally the first cycle, is a little bit weaker, because they just don't build quite as robust of a follicle, which then they don't make quite as robust of a corpus luteum, which is the organ that kind of that makes the progesterone that helps maintain pregnancies. But what that does is that primes the cow's brain to respond much better the next time. And so, yeah, like that second, you know, heat is going to be a little stronger and better. The interesting thing is that if you use the seeder that has progesterone in it, it acts as that priming of the brain and it kind of acts as the first cycle. So you can use that on anestrous cows that have not cycled and you can still achieve pregnancies. So maybe you're trying to, you know, bring your group of cows into a tighter window. You can challenge some of those cows that are in a shorter postpartum window, and some of them are going to accept, you know, some of them that are maybe only 45 days from calving will get pregnant by using that estrus synchronization protocol. So 45 days is usually kind of the minimum that we look for breeding a cow.
And is there anything in your experience as far as calving season and cows being more ready to calve or more ready to breed back? Anything like that?
So I mean, once you get towards like 60 days or beyond that, most cows should be ready, should have cycled a couple times and should be ready to go. A lot of it is a function, again, of their body weight and how well they're doing in that aspect. It varies wildly, I'm sure, based on where you're at, what time of year you're calving. There's something to be said that, you know, when springtime comes and they're out on good grass and things like that, that they're going to be cycling better. That's just nature. I think a lot of it comes back to body condition score and just overall general health. So like with first calf heifers, those are usually like a challenging group to get rebred for their second time, because they are still growing and they've calved and are trying to, you know, bounce back from that, and they're lactating and they just have their general body maintenance. And so they're usually the ones that you see that are a little rougher looking, and they might be your more challenging group. But you still don't want to shy away from maybe AIing those cows, because we're generally managing them in a separate group anyway, because we calved them all out as heifers together, and maybe you're feeding them a little better. So it might not be that hard to continue on with AIing them. Another way to just guarantee that you're going to breed back easier is having calvingese bulls. You know, if they have an easy birth and a smaller calf for the first time, it's easier for them to bounce back. You have less issues with uterine infections or, you know, just getting torn up in the calving process. And so that increases their chances of breeding back the second time.
Well, Adrian, I think we could go on and on and on, and I appreciate your time today. Is there anything I missed, anything you wish I would have asked you, or any major things that we left out?
No, I mean, yeah, I could talk about it all day probably. So yeah, no, I appreciate that. I would just encourage people to, you know, talk to their neighbors about their AI program. Most people really want to share what they're doing and will help you and talk you through it. And, you know, all the AI studs have many talented people in them that can come and they can walk you through it and kind of show you, maybe walk through the cost benefit for, you know, each specific ranch and their environment. I encourage people to look into it.
Any other critical resources that you'd like me to link to at the show notes page, workingcows.net/38?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. I can maybe send you some later. I know. There's a really good, there's a great seminar symposium that they do every year that is the Applied Reproductive Strategies for Beef Cattle, and they move it around the country every year. This year it is August 29th and 30th in Ruidoso, New Mexico. And it's open to producers, and there's a lot of, you know, university researchers that come and industry people. So they walk you through, you know, the very basic estrus cycle stuff, and then they work their way all the way up through the more advanced technologies in reproduction. It's a very like affordable, you know, great place to network and ask people things, you know, about starting your AI program. And so that you'll have to put the link for that, but that's the one through Iowa, or you'll see the Beef Reproductive Task Force. And they have a lot of resources for AI there.
I do think there's one thing I want to touch on.
Yeah.
What about bulls and the necessity of bulls in this equation, and how do we still have to have just as many bulls as we had before, or how does that work?
You generally can cut down on your bulls a little bit. One thing you need to remember is that when the cows do come back into heat, there's going to be more cows coming into heat at one time. And depending on how big a range you're turning out on, you know, and how much your bulls are traveling, you know, but you generally can cut back on numbers of bulls. You know, in a commercial situation, we're not cutting out the bull by doing AI, and you still are, you know, you still want to find, you know, your good quality bulls to do that cover that cleanup AI, I guess, or sorry, not cleanup, cleanup breeding,
cleanup service.
You cleanup service. So there's still, you know, yeah, you're not completely getting rid of the bull here. But there's different gains that we're going for, and it's not necessarily all about the AI genetics anymore. It's about the reproductive success of your cows.
Very good. Well, I appreciate that so much. It was excellent. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks. I appreciate it too.
Still trying to track down next week's guest. I've got a couple of different emails out to different people. If you've got any guest recommendations, you can send them my way. I'd be happy to see if I can get in touch with them and get them on the show. I've got a pretty long list of people that have been recommended. I've been working through that list as we go. So I'm not exactly sure where next week will take us, but I have been really enjoying these discussions. I've been getting lots of positive feedback. So please join us next week for another episode of the Working Cows Podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.